From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2009 when a couple adopted their first kids, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. Rob Shear and his husband Reese knew about the struggle for kids in the foster system because Rob had spent his teen years in the system before becoming homeless at 18. And now here he was years later, seeing two kids show up with belongings in a trash bag, just as he had experienced when he was a foster child. Rob and Reese knew they did not want kids to live like that, to have everything you own in a trash bag. And they founded Comfort Cases, a nonprofit organization providing backpacks with essential items like toiletries, pajamas, activities, and other items for kids in foster care. The charity went from providing around 300 kits in 2013 to donating 25,000 to kids in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia foster care systems in 2015. He's probably got an updated number for me now here in 2017. It's remarkable. And today, Rob is in Rochester. He's a guest of Hillside presenting his story and the state of the foster system. And he can address it from a wide range of angles. His own life experience, how things have changed, his experience as a dad, his experience as a gay dad, dealing with discrimination. He's one of my guests for the hour, and it's great to have Rob Shear. Welcome to Connections. Thanks for being here, Rob.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also here, we've got Carolyn Haviland, who is a foster parent herself. Caroline, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And here is Carol Hunt, who is a program manager with Hillside Therapeutic Foster Care. Carol, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
I just want to start with your personal story, Rob, because you have been now just about everywhere. You know, Upworthy took you into millions of people's computers, and you know, I know you've been on the Today Show and all over the place with your story. Your own childhood, you were one of, what, 10 kids?
10. I was the youngest of 10 kids. So my parents passed away when I was 10, and I immediately went into what they call care. Back in the early 80s, it was a lot different than it is now. I think we've grown some, but we have a long way to go.
And so what do you remember in those early days for you and Karen? And then take me kind of through your teen years as best you can.
You know, I remember my stuff being in a trash bag. I remember becoming a teenager and, you know, no one walking into my English class and pulling me out to say, hey, let's fill out college applications. I was one of those kids. The kids that we see are invisible to most everyone. You know, we have over 400,000 kids in the United States that are in foster care, and only 3% of them are going to go on to get a 4-year degree in college. Just not acceptable.
Did your classmates know you were in foster system?
Most of them did. Mm-hmm. Most of them did. So when I turned 18, I was a senior in high school, and I became homeless because, you know, at that particular time, when you turned 18, you aged out of the system. It didn't matter where you were. And I happened to still be in school. And so I aged out and became homeless. And I had friends who would keep the window open on a cold night and let me crash on their couch. And, you know, there were many nights that I slept in the bathroom at the local taco place because I just needed somewhere to put my head.
You used the late hours at libraries as well for a place to be?
I used to sit at the public library until 9:30 at night when they closed. And the librarian would come over and she'd tap me on my shoulder and she would say, it's time to go. And I would grab my trash bag and, you know, off to the local taco place. And the owner there used to keep the back door unlocked for the bathroom. It was an outside bathroom, and I would go in there and I would sleep.
And so when you hear stories of, for example, you know, 2,000 kids in the Rochester City School District system technically homeless and living in this way, which might mean, you know, sort of car to car or couch to couch, family members place to place, and you think about what they're dealing with, you know, that was your life for a period. And then eventually you decided on the military, is that
yeah.
right?
See, I didn't join the military because I love my country. You know, the community had given up on me. I joined it because I was hungry. I was cold and I wanted a roof over my head. So I had no other choice.
And what was that experience like for you?
You know, I said to this morning when I was able to speak to some amazing people about my journey in the military, you know, people don't realize that it wasn't all that great. I went in the military. Once I had joined the military, as a little boy, the abuse was real bad. And so my father thought it would be funny to control me by not allowing me to go to the bathroom. And so if I would urinate, he would whip me or he would put cigarettes out on me. And so for all these years, I had held my urine till where my bladder ruptured in the Navy. And so the Navy was kind enough to fix that problem, but then they discharged me and I became homeless again. and I had enough money to live in a hotel that I paid by the week, and I had 4 weeks worth that the Navy had sent me home with, and I got a job, and I just started working and just trying to make sure that I didn't end up like the statistics that we see. You know, you look at, you know, we just had some new findings come out, and one of the ones that really blow my mind is that kids that are in the foster care system, when they exit out, they have a higher rate of post-traumatic stress disorder than our veterans that are coming back from combat. And that was all done by the Casey Foundation, who's looking at kids that are aging out of our system. It's unbelievable.
What about incarceration? How has that changed?
Oh my gosh, it hasn't changed at all. I mean, we are graduating people from foster care to our prison system. Last year, we incarcerated 1.6 million people. 1.2 million, you can connect them to foster care. It's not acceptable.
And that really hasn't moved much, huh?
Has not moved at all. The only thing that has moved since 2012 is the number has increased. That's it. You know, we're not seeing an increase in kids going to college. We're not seeing an increase of the homeless rate going down. We're not seeing an increase in anything, but it's getting worse. You look at the drug problem that we have with kids from foster youth. You look at the percentage. They're 7% higher to get on drugs than at somebody in a traditional family.
So as we go throughout this hour, we're going to talk about what might change that. I want to keep working through Rob's story because it does have a remarkable set of conclusions if you don't know it. When did you meet Reese?
12 years ago. And so Reese and I met 12 years ago.
It was one of those love at first sight things.
I have to say it was a little corny. It was love at first sight. I met Reese and we had our first date, and the very first thing out of my mouth to him was, "Do you want to be a dad?"
And wow, that's pretty forward, man.
He said, "Are you kidding me?" And he was like, "What?" He was like, "After I get my master's."
You're so lucky he did not leave.
No, I was lucky. And I said, "Listen, I'm at an age I don't want to waste any more time."
No, that's fair.
And I want to be a dad. And so, "Do you want to be a dad?" He said, "Of course, but, you know, let's get through date one."
And like, getting ahead of ourselves. But I've seen a video where you've addressed this, where you say, you know, when you're gay in this country, for a while, you knew marriage probably wasn't happening and parenthood probably wasn't happening, right?
Wasn't in our horizon whatsoever. We knew that we could adopt overseas because they were a little bit more flexible when it came to two males adopting. And that's the avenue we were going to go, because you're right. We were not having marriage being passed.
Yeah.
We weren't seeing things like that. And definitely adoption. We had no friends that were gay and had kids. So now I find there's lots of us.
That has really changed.
Huge change.
And I wish you could see Rob's face, the way he brightened up just thinking about it. It's an amazing change in this country. So you meet Reese, and you know, well, 2005 might have been tough, but marriage equality was not that far away.
Yeah.
And, you know, would you have, if I would have asked you in the weeks that you started dating Reese, if you would have believed marriage equality was coming, what would you have said?
No.
No?
No. I would have said no. I didn't think it was going to happen. We saw states talk about it. We saw states pass it, and then it would get overturned.
Yeah.
And I remember when it got passed in D.C., and Reese was changing one of the kids' diapers. And I walked into the nursery, and I said, "Oh, my gosh, next week they're going to allow gays to get married in D.C. I said, "Do you want to get married?" And he was like, "I'm changing a diaper." And I said, "But do you?" And he said, "Okay." So we were the 20th couple to go stand in line with our children and get married.
Oh, that's awesome. And boy, you really pop great questions to Reese. Great moments. I love that. This is the best love story, by the way. But now take me through your adoption, because obviously you have to kind of figure out, you know, what is available to you, what the process would be like. You think about your own life as a former foster teen. What happened?
Well, you know, for me, I didn't want to adopt those kids. And that's what I used to think about kids in foster care. Those were the troubled kids.
Even
those
with your own past?
Even with my own past, because I didn't want people to know about it. See, I was blessed to really, my life was in a great place. I was a successful businessman. I went to cocktail parties with senators and mayors. And if they knew that I was a homeless teenager, how would they treat me? you know, I didn't know the difference between there, there, and there. I had no college education. How would they really respect me? And that's what I thought of myself. And it wasn't till one Saturday morning, Reese and I were watching TV, probably hungover from a cocktail party the night before, and Wednesday's Child came on, which is a local show that shows foster children. And Reese looked at me and said, now explain to me again why we're not adopting a child out of foster care. And it was that aha moment. And he said, do you realize how many kids you have done a disservice to by not telling your story? And at that point, the tears rolled down my eyes that I had shamed myself and all of these children. So that's when we decided to go through and adopt through foster care.
And was that a challenge?
It was a major challenge.
Okay.
First of all, we're two white guys adopting in an area where 97% of the kids were African American. It was a major challenge. I remember when we filled out the application, we took all the classes, we had all of our paperwork in line. You know, we're that typical got it together, ready to move on, and the phone never rang. And months went by, and it didn't ring. And months went by, and I finally got a hold of somebody in Child and Family Services and said, why are we not getting called? There's over 2,500 kids right now who are looking for a home. And their exact words were, you're two white guys.
Well, and that kind of lines up with what I saw a report by Adopt US Kids that said many potential LGBT parents face obstacles when they seek to become foster or adoptive parents. And that report details the difficulties that they face, which highlights discriminatory practices still occurring in many states, barring adoption within a group where adoptions are usually a first choice and could make a positive impact on the lives of foster children around the country. Some states still have legislation barring same-sex or unmarried couples from adopting. Those laws exist in Arkansas, Michigan, Mississippi, Nebraska, in Utah, and contribute to a shortage of adoptive and foster parents that could be alleviated. Still a problem today?
Still a problem today. Still a problem. And we have to talk about it because it's not fair to the kids. See, I say this, I can't teach my kids how to be black. I can't teach them how to be gay. The only thing I can teach them is how to be a good human. And we're missing that along the way because we're so worried about, oh, they have two dads. My kids don't care that they have two dads. They only care the fact that they're loved and they're wanted.
And so you've got four kids now.
Four.
And they're awesome?
Awesome.
How old are they?
So our youngest is 8, and our two boys are 10. And by the way, they're 3 months apart, and they wanted to make sure I told everybody that. They're not twins.
Okay.
And our daughter is 12.
And in the interviews I've seen with you, you talk about how occasionally you can talk about with them about having two white dads. They don't care, right?
They don't care. They don't care.
They want to be loved.
They
kids
just
want to
be loved. You know, and it's funny. I was telling this story. My one son, Grayson, he loves when people walk up and they'll say, are they adopted? And he'll say, nah, we're not adopted. And he'll look at me and my husband and he'll say, are they really asking these questions?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, buddy, they do. But yeah, they don't care.
And what about, I guess their peers are the ones who would ask those questions. But for the most part, life is, you know.
Okay,
you
so let's talk about that.
Okay.
Because I think that we as adults think that peers are talking about it, but they're not. They don't care.
That's
their friends do not care. I live in a very conservative little town and they don't care. Their buddies who come and have sleepovers don't care. We're the ones that care. My kids don't come home and say they played with the black kid or they played with the kid that's tan. They just played with kids. We're the ones that make them think that they care. They don't.
And are you seeing then, it sounds like their generation is more tolerant than, you know, yours and mine and previous generations.
I agree. Very much so. Very much so. I do think that we're going to see some major changes with that, you know, as the older generations are being more acceptable, but also dying off. And we're going to see that, you know, kids don't care. I know in my community alone, our principal, who's amazing, they stopped doing donuts for dads and muffins for moms because they didn't want to isolate children. So they just stopped it. You know, there shouldn't be daughter and daddy dances. What about all those little girls who don't have a dad?
And yet, well, some adults, many adults in this country, will say they care. And I think Rob's point is really interesting. If you watch kids grow up, I've got a 5-year-old named Reese, by the way. R-H-Y-S, though.
Oh, so different my spelling. Son Tristan's middle name is Reese, R-H-Y-S.
Oh, very good. Little Welsh spelling. And and it's fascinating to watch him because his, you know, his natural inclination is just, he just, as you say, wants to play with someone. He does not care who. He has a real love for everybody. We would have to teach him to hate. We would have to teach him that this person is less or this person is less. It's not naturally in him. But we see plenty of instances where adults in this country are very capable of teaching those things. And I know you guys have run into, you know, sort of media flare-ups and, you know.
Oh, we have.
You know, tell me a little bit about that.
So it started with Amaya was chosen as the American Girl by Mattel.
Which is your daughter who's how old?
My daughter, at the time, she was 10.
Okay.
And so Mattel came in and they heard the story about Amaya and Amaya coming to our home with a trash bag and how we started the charity. And Amaya got chosen as the American Girl. And they came and filmed at our home, took pictures. They took pictures of Reese and I and our four kids sitting on a couch. And they wrote an article. Never in the article, by the way, did they mention that she had two dads. Never did they say we were gay. They never used those words. But what they did do is they showed a picture of our family. And that immediately had a supposedly million moms group backlash and boycotted Mattel and started this media blitz that they were pushing the homophobic, you know, propaganda and that they were all about pushing the gay agenda. And I don't know what gay agenda we have, by the way. It was hard. I mean, we had calls where, you know, hateful things that people said show up at our home. And I remember when the story broke, Reese and I set the kids down and we said, listen, we can do one of two things. We can shut our doors and our windows, and this will pass because media does that. Or we can face it. And our son Grayson said, you know, Dad, you taught us to face everything. And at that point, we opened up our front door and allowed every media into our home to see that we were just like everybody else.
Can I just say also, I mean, it helps that you guys are appallingly good-looking family. I mean, it's
oh my God, thank you.
No, it is. I mean, it is like the all-American. It is a beautiful family. You can find plenty of pictures online. You are a beautiful family. That is just the truth. How did things? I mean, I don't think things don't end. But what was sort of the result?
So you know, the result for me is that, you know, we really realize what community was about. The community that came out. And by the way, you know, I might be in Darnestown, Maryland, and you're here in Rochester. You're still part of my community. And the fact of the outpouring of love that we got from all over the world, and I mean all over the world. We've had reporters show up from Australia to talk to my daughter and to myself and my husband and our boys, and just to let us know that, you know what, they loved us. And I will tell you, those million moms, if I could see them, I'd hug them so hard and thank them, because they really did, you know, catapult the charity and got people talking about foster care.
Also, if they could just hang out with you guys, they'd probably like you. So, you know,
I would hope.
Yeah. The late writer David Rakoff, who was one of my favorite writers, passed away a few years ago at the age of 47 of cancer. One of the best writers ever. And David Rakoff was gay, and he told Jon Stewart on The Daily Show one time, you know, he talks to people and say, oh, you really think there's a gay agenda? You know, like, I don't know what the agenda items are. Do you want to break any news?
I don't know any agenda items. I mean, laundry is something we do a lot of. And, you know, we have a farm because of our son.
Oh, yes.
And
probably a lot of cleaning.
So, yeah, we have a lot of cleaning up after chickens and stuff. So that's about the only agenda we have. But I will tell you, though, that we started a little over 2 years ago, we started a group in our area called Gay Dads Group. And we have about 70 families that mm-hmm. come to our farm with their children, who are two dads with kids that are biracial, and they're black, and they're from all over the world, and they get to come together on our farm and see that there's other kids just like them, you know. And by the way, they love it. They have no issue whatsoever.
That's really cool. We're talking to Rob Shear, who is the founder of Comfort Cases. So let's talk about how that got started. 2013?
2013 it got started.
Okay, and so as Rob mentioned, you know, having everything that you have in a trash bag, not only himself, but saw the children that he adopted show up with everything in a trash bag. What happened?
So my kids, they showed up at their home, at our home. They had been in several other homes and still had a trash bag, and it really haunted me. And about 3 years ago, Reese and I were getting the kids ready to do what we did every year, which was to go pick some angels off a tree and buy a bunch of toys for kids and make our kids feel good because they did something for a month. And I looked around at our community and realized that we were all doing that. We were all patting ourselves on the back for toys that we were buying for kids, which, by the way, would probably break them by the 26th of December, and then nobody was going to remember those children. And I said to to Reese, I said, you know, we as a family need to do something different. And so we decided that we were going to get some backpacks together. We were going to put some really essential things in there, like a toothbrush. Our daughter arrived in our home with 8 cavities at the age of 4 because no one had brushed her teeth. My teeth that you say might look good, they cost me an arm and a leg because no time did anyone take me to a dentist. Mm. You know, these are things that kids should get as a toothbrush, a bar of soap. We put a book in there. I tell my children all the time, the color of their skin is not what separates them from other children. It's their education level. So we make sure that we put a book and a brand new pair of pajamas. And we thought, you know what, we'll do a couple hundred cases, send them to the local foster care system. And little did I know that 3 years later and over 25,000 cases, and by the way, that we send to Texas and Arizona and to Detroit and to Kentucky, we no longer just help kids locally. We are helping kids all over the United States.
And where are you online?
Where am I online? So right now, I think we're at 138 million views on our video. And so if they go to comfortcases.org, you know, they can find us.
Comfortcases.org.
Comfortcases.org.
Easy to find you and easy to contribute if they want to?
Easy to contribute. Yeah. And by the way, they can contribute in many different ways. I tell people all the time, you know, a lot of us travel a lot. So when next time you go to the hotel, don't use the soap and the shampoo and the lotion. Save it, okay? Those can go into a comfort case.
Really good idea. Talking to Rob about his experience, his work with Comfort Cases, comfortcases.org, was in Rochester, essentially telling the story. Tell us what you did this morning in Rochester.
So this morning, I was able to get in front of a group of people that had signed up to come and hear me give a speech and tell my story and to talk about what can we do as a community to help the foster care system. You know, I said this morning, I repeat this, and sometimes people say I say it too much, but the system is not broken. It is shattered. Broken things, you know, you'll have a boy, you get the super glue and you put it back together.
Sure.
When it's shattered, it has to be rebuilt, and we must rebuild our foster care system. We have already come way too far, and there hasn't been change. We need some major change.
And so in the rest of this hour, I want to spend talking to all three of our guests about exactly how they think we can do that. Rob is here. Carol Hunt is a program manager with Hillside Therapeutic Foster Care. Caroline Haviland is a foster parent who, Caroline, by the way, if I can ask you, you know, for your own foster journey here, tell me about becoming a foster parent and that decision and a little bit more on your background there.
Well, I worked for Hillside for 10 years, undergraduate and graduate programs. I interned. I have my master's from Syracuse, and then I became a foster care coordinator and ran the foster care program for a couple of years. And then I left and decided that administrative work wasn't my thing, so I went back to direct care and worked in social work field for several years and felt a pulling towards working with kids again. So I bought a house and I live in a condominium, and I have neighbors on either side of me that help support my village to help raise children. I don't have any of my own. I'm single. And so I work with Hillside to take in children and help with their parents to raise them. And so I'm a foster parent helping families to take care of their children.
And when did you start again?
I started 5 years ago.
5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And any regrets? How do you enjoy it?
No, I love it. I do a program called Respite, which is I take children in over the weekends, and I work with them Friday through Sunday. I take the children in, and then they go back to their homes with their parents, so that I work with their parents and help them to raise their children. And I'll take them once a month, and then over the month they're at their home, and then the weekend during the month I'm helping their child to follow the rules in my house, and then helping the parent while they're with them.
Okay. And now you've had this experience for 5 years. You had the experience at work. How do you view the overall system? And you know, I mean, there's a lot of conversation. We're going to have more conversation this hour about how to change it if it needs change. What do you think needs to change?
Well, there's many different programs that provide foster care. And so it's getting the children into the right system that is needed for their care. And that's very difficult to know what avenue there is for the behaviors that are being demonstrated by the child and getting them into that care quick enough. And the waiting lists and the workers returning calls, and it's just so overburdened that, I mean, it's trying to get the child into care quick enough and getting the needs met, because there's so many needs out there.
Well, we'll take our only break of the hour and come back and talk to Carol Hunt about the work that Hillside Therapeutic Foster Care is doing. And then that question that Rob poses, if it's a shattered system, if you're starting new today, if you're building a new system from scratch, what it would look like. We'll talk about that as well when we come back after our only break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, a new fitness center opens in Rochester. Well, a new home, but not just any fitness center, a new home for Rockcovery Fitness. They're aimed at helping people in addiction, dealing with their addiction, particularly heroin and opioids, and we'll meet the people behind Rockcovery. Then second hour, the Rochester Music Hall of Fame has a new class. We will meet many of them. Talk to you Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Carol Hunt is program manager with Hillside Therapeutic Foster Care. And first of all, let's just talk about what that means that you do. What do you do every day, Carol?
What I do every day is I manage a team of social workers who work with kids in therapeutic foster care along with the foster families and birth families.
Okay. And give me that overview of how our system is currently set up and, you know, if you think it's, you know, healthy, if you feel like changes are necessary right now.
Our current system is set up where kids come into the foster care system through the family court. They can come in through parents' neglect or if kids get in trouble in the community through a JD or PINS petition. So we work directly with our local Department of Social Services, and we are the contract agency for therapeutic foster care. And then within that, we have a team of staff who work with the kids, birth families, and foster families.
What do you need most to make the system even better?
Quality foster parents. Quality foster parents that are able to parent the kids, meet the kids' needs. It could be example, I know Rob talked a lot about, as parents, we take our kids to wherever they need to go. If it's a doctor or dance lessons or soccer practice, we need those families that are able to do that, along with what Caroline said, partnering with the birth families, because the goal is always reunification if possible. So we want to strengthen that family so the kids can go back home.
Right now, tell me how big the need is for foster parents, quality foster parents. I mean, it's one thing to need. I mean, is this a gaping need? You know, what is the actual need right now?
I would say we've been at crisis for many years in the recruitment of quality foster parents. And I call it a crisis because I do think it is a crisis, because we're always looking at the kids' needs when they come into care and what would be the best foster home match for them. Every foster home has strengths and they have needs. So we try to match those strengths and needs with the needs of the child and the family. The more quality foster parents we have, the better we are able to make that match of that child.
And so, if someone is listening right now and is thinking, that's something that I could do, that's something I would consider, what is the process like of becoming a foster parent?
They can go to hillside.com or they can call 585-256-7500. That's our service integration number that can certainly help them to get and connect with the right person to tell them more about fostering.
Does it take a long time to kind of clear those hurdles and become a foster parent?
Not really. People are able to go at their own pace. I mean, there is training and many things that they do need to do, but people can work at their own pace. But we have staff who are very, very responsive to that.
What did you make here in Robster? I know you're hearing it here. You've heard it elsewhere. What do you think?
Amazing. When I heard the story about the trash bags last night for the first time, he lived the life that we deal with every day. There's probably not a week that goes by that I don't see a youth coming into the office or leaving one foster home to the next that doesn't have a trash bag. And it's heartbreaking.
Listeners, if you want to either share your stories, have questions on the foster system, or weigh in at all, you can do that. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Rob Scheer is the founder of Comfort Cases. He's a national foster care advocate, parent of four, former foster child during his teenage years himself. And let's talk about if it's broken, if it's shattered.
It's shattered.
How you would change it from the ground up.
And I agree. I mean, it needs to first start with the foster parents that we need. You know, I said this today and I repeat this all the time. We do not need beds any longer. We need to stop talking about needing beds. We need homes. We need people to step up and do exactly why we built communities. And we built communities for each other, so we can take care of each other. And we need to start with the children. I know that there are homes out there that people are willing to open up their door and to love these children as if they're their own. And the one thing that we have to realize that these kids are coming into a system that they have not asked to be in. These kids are coming into a system and they need to be wanted. And that means, you're right, if they have a doctor's appointment, that foster parent needs to take them to that doctor's appointment. And if they have to stay up late to do homework, that they're sitting right next to them and helping them with homework. The child needs to be guided. And that's where we have to start first. It has to start with educating our public, because I'm telling you right now, there are people that are listening right now and they have a myth about foster children. They have a myth. And let's couple of the myths. Number one, they think that the foster children are majority black. That is not true. The majority of our foster children are Caucasian, so let's get that straight. It's not an inner city thing. This is a country thing. We are populated with kids in foster care. It's all over the United States. Number two, that these kids are bad. I've never met a bad child in my life. I'm telling you that. I've never met a bad child. I've met children that needed to be re-guided, redirected, to be shown love. But there's no such thing as a bad child. And then as the media, stop talking about the kids that are falling to the wayside all the time. Let's talk about some positive kids. Let's talk about the kids that have come back into our communities from the foster care system and are helping to rebuild our communities. There are kids out there like that. On Saturday, I was blessed to be able to give a scholarship. My husband and I gave a scholarship to a boy that's in foster care. And he is graduating and coming to this beautiful town to go to college. And we did not know that on Saturday when we handed him the scholarship. But here's a boy who's been in foster care for 3 years, and he is told he wasn't going to make anything of himself. And by the way, he's graduating with a 3.8 and coming to the University of Rochester. So there are some amazing kids out there. They just need some love.
Now, do these myths drive potential foster parents away from becoming...
They do. Okay. They do. They I really believe that. I go around and talk to people all the time, and they say, well, I hear that those kids, you know, that they can break your house up, or I hear that, you know, there's no support once the kid comes into the house, or, you know, I hear that, you know, those kids, you know, they'll tear the neighborhood up, and it's like, no, those kids are not like that. Those kids just need some love. They just need to be guided.
And so when it comes to recruiting more parents, we can blow up those myths. The media can do a better job, for sure. Is there anything more to incentivize the parents to get involved? I mean, is there other ways to get people to say yes?
You know, I would say they'd have to come and volunteer at a center. Come and shoot some hoops with some of these boys who I've been able to meet and, you know, maybe sit down with some of these girls and talk to them. And I can tell you that you can see in their eyes, these are some amazing kids. And they would be amazing in your home.
Let me ask you a blunt question, because I'm very sensitive about putting those adjective labels on. Like, I hate the term bad kids, right? Because all of a sudden you attach that to that and becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I do want to know, Rob, if you think there are too many what people would describe as bad parents or bad foster parents out there in the system.
So probably everybody's going to, your lights might light up because they're not going to like this. But yes, there is. We have more, I think, bad foster parents in our system, then we have, quote, bad kids. And the problem is for so many years, we needed beds. At the end of the day, that's what we're in, beds. And we forgot somewhere along the way that it's not beds any longer, it's homes. It's quality people who are doing this for the right reason. And that reason is to make a difference in a child's life. I remember when our children arrived in our home, Reese and I, where we were all for reunification. We knew that there was a high possibility that our children would go back to their birth parents. And what we said to each other is that if we could change a child's life for just one day and let them know that they're wanted, then we did our job.
So I have a super ignorant question then. And then I'm going to come to your phone call. So if you're on the phone lines, hang there for 1 second. What would motivate people to become foster parents, which is difficult? It's a huge lift. It's a lot of work and energy. If you really don't want to do it, or you don't want to do what it entails to be a parent.
What would motivate them to be a foster parent?
Yeah, if they're not going to want to do the homework, to take the kid to the park, to play, you know, all the things, the little things, the big things.
Well, I mean, we all, you know, as I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again, there's a white elephant in the room that no one doesn't want to talk about, and that's the stipend that they get for taking a child in. The state pays them a percentage of money.
Okay, so it's about money.
And it's about money. And that's why I think a lot of times, you know, when we see, I mean, we're blessed to have an agency like Hillside. I'm telling you, this agency is amazing to have. That's not the norm. Okay? This is not the norm.
So,
but we could learn from this, by the way. You know, we should have other counties come in, other states come in and see what they've done. We could learn something from this.
Caroline, I know you want to jump in. Go
ahead. Yeah, I think it's more than that, though. I think it's if you take a child into your home and you see them making a difference and making positive changes, it helps you and it motivates you to want to take that child into your home. Because when they come into your home and you've heard that they've been a bad child and they've been having these negative behaviors out in the community or in their school, and then you bring them into your home, and you're making that difference on them where they're not showing those negative behaviors and they're not doing those negative things that they've been told to you that they have that history of doing. And you're seeing positive changes that they're, you know, helping you in the house and they're helping you do things. And you see small changes that are positive, that's going to motivate you to want to take those children into your house.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we need a lot more of that. Carol Hunt, before I go to the phones, what do you think about what you're hearing from Rob? I mean, that's a harsh assessment, but he wants to be blunt here. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I believe it's passion. It's in our hearts. The folks that we find that want to parent, that want to do those extra things, taking the kids to the doctor's appointment and being involved, it's in their heart. It's within them. And that's really what makes the difference, is wanting to make a change for that child, which in turn makes a change for the community in which we're living in.
Okay, let me grab a first phone call. And this is Penny in West Bloomfield. Go ahead, Penny.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In the late 60s, I was a social worker at the Monroe County Department of Social Services in the foster care program. And I know what Rob's talking about, because every kid I had 52 foster kids I was in charge of, and every one of them had a trash bag, sometimes two trash bags. And I suggested to my supervisor and to the head of the Children's Welfare Department that maybe we could purchase some suitcases, it was then. I don't even know if there were backpacks then. And so every child would have a little suitcase they could have as their own. And that didn't go anywhere. So I bought little suitcases myself for mostly the girls, because they seemed to need it more. But I was just thrilled to hear Rob's suggestion that came to fruition and now is nationwide. It gives me chills. So thank you, Rob, very much.
Oh, Penny, thank you. That's pretty cool to hear that kind
of
perspective, isn't it?
It's really cool.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, the fact is that she brought it up. She brought it up to her supervisors and said, we needed to do this. And it went to deaf's ear. And that's what happens. I know for a fact that we have we are going to see Child and Family Services throughout the United States start banning trash bags. And I know that. And we do not need a politician to come in and tell us to do it. We need to do it because we know that's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. These children deserve a little dignity. And they should not ever, ever carry a trash bag. That's whether they're carrying it to a foster home or they're going from one home to the next. We have enough money in this system that we can purchase some suitcases for these children.
All right, 844-295-TALK. If you want to weigh in on the foster system and the stories you're hearing, maybe your own perspective, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Let me get an email from Gio, who says, my wife and I thought about adopting two foster children, a brother and a sister. We were talked out of it by our social worker, saying it would be a lot of work. Eventually, we did not adopt. We pushed to do fertility with a great outcome, but what a disservice that social worker did. And, you know, again, that's somebody who's thinking about adopting out of the foster system, not necessarily becoming a foster parent. But that makes me wonder if are we giving potentially people who want to either adopt or become foster parents, are we giving them good advice? I mean, Rob, do you ever hear stories like that?
I hear stories like that all the time. You know, I've heard stories where they've been talked out of social workers. I've heard stories where they've been scared out of it because of having to deal with birth parents. You know, again, it's a lot of myths. And again, it's about educating our public, educating, you know, social workers, they have the hardest job in the world. I've been dealing with them for many, many, many years, and their job is very hard. And the thing is that we need to start allocating more money through our states for these children. And that means to be able to get more social workers, to be able to pay them what they should be paid, by the way.
Caroline, you want to weigh in on some of that? Go ahead.
Absolutely.
I see you're itching to talk about that.
Well, the human service field, you're definitely not going to get rich in it. And unfortunately, the social workers aren't paid what they should be paid. And so a lot of them are just doing it, you know, out of the goodness of their heart. And so some of them aren't as qualified as they should be, unfortunately. So,
it sounds like that is a consequence of not prioritizing.
Right.
And you have to look at the burnout ratio, too, for social workers, okay? So maybe not for a private agency like Hillside, but for the majority of the United States, social workers are turned over like 2 to 3 years. I can tell you with our children alone, we had roughly about 6 social workers in a 4-year period. Mm-hmm. That's more instability for a child that we're supposed to be taking care of.
Another question. Alan wants to know, should we get rid of the stipend? I don't know how big the stipend is, and I don't know that you can't.
And I don't think that we should get rid of the stipend, but I do believe that the stipend needs to be looked at closer. I do believe that we need to educate our foster parents about what the stipend is for. And I do also believe that we need to be preparing these children for when they age out. Whether we take a little bit of that stipend and put it in a savings account, a college fund, we need to prepare these kids for when they age out, because the only thing they're doing is they're aging out from the system to the streets. That's it.
All right. Before we get back to that question, because that's something that Rob's story stuck out with me, and we haven't talked as much about it. I want to grab Lori in Rochester, who's on the phones next. Go ahead, Lori.
Hello. I agree with everything that Rob is saying. I have to try to remember everything I just made the comment about. I did foster care for 6 years in the past, and I had things happen that I couldn't do it anymore. So I had recently been recertified, and I had a child move in with me just last night. And she did have suitcases, but also did have a big black leaf bag with some of her stuff in it. But my main comment was that I just this morning talked to a coworker who said she was considering foster care. And I also found that many friends and relatives and just people in general, their comment was what Rob said, why would you take a child like that in your home with your other kids? And my comment on that is I'd ask my adult children if they felt that I should continue, because I also have a 12-year-old. I asked my adult children how they felt about it and should I continue with foster care, and all of them said absolutely, that they learned a lot from it. They learned empathy. They learned that other kids don't have what they have. And the other comment I had about people saying that it's that the kids are problem kids, I had probably 10 children in my home over the 6 years, some of them up to a year. I'm in contact with most of the kids still. 2 of them are married and have kids of their own. And out of all those children, I had problems with 1 child. That was it. Hmm. So I also agree they're not bad kids. Hmm. They're kids that need redirection and somebody that cares.
Yeah. Need love. Lori, thank you.
Thank you for recertifying yourself to do what, you know, so many people don't realize is such an amazing, amazing opportunity to help mold our children. You know, I said this the other day, children are like wet cement. Anything that falls on them will make an impression. And I can tell you that you're going to make an unbelievable impression on these children. So thank you.
Carol, do you want to add anything that you heard from Lori there?
Thank you, Lori. Coming back to do foster care certainly speaks to your experience before, and I would ask that you spread the word for foster parents, because we, as you heard me say, we're in crisis and we need more quality foster parents, and they are good kids. They do come with problems, but with people working with them, the services do help.
I mean, I come with problems.
Yeah, I was going to say, so do I.
Right.
But I take the point, yeah. But they are not problem human beings.
They're not problem
they human beings.
Beings
who are dealing with
they,
different
problems. They have struggles. Yeah.
And by the way, our next caller, I think, is someone who's thinking about exactly that. Carrie and Victor, next up. Go ahead, Carrie.
Hi, I just was wondering, my husband and I through the years have thought about foster care or adopting, but we have two children and both of them had high needs, and we're at a kind of at that transition point. And one thing I wondered about that stipend over the years, because, you know, I hear about bad foster parents just wanting the stipend. What about, it might take more organization, but what about the idea of having the money go straight to only dental and doctor appointments? And, I mean, you don't really, I guess I don't think we need too much. Of course, we have a garden and we can and everything. You don't need much for food. And gosh, there's a thrift store. We buy all our stuff, and it is quality at the thrift store. I only get quality stuff. And I don't know whether all that money, I don't even know how much it is. I don't know if it is like a lump sum to people. I haven't looked that far into it. But my goodness, it just seems sort of unregulated. And I think it could use more regulation. So what do you think about that? What's the...
Yeah, Carrie, thank you. Go ahead.
I can speak to that. The stipend is actually a board rate. It's a board rate. It's supposed to be, it is for the child's care. And that in New York State, and I can only speak for New York State, but that is regulated by the Office of Children and Family Services. And those are set state rates. That's not through Hillside or any other contract agency or the Department of Social Services.
And I'm, Caroline, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Well, it's going to depend on the program that they're in and they're coming from. With Hillside, there's several different programs that provide foster care. And so the rates are different per each program. And so it's not a lot of money, and it's based on each day that the child's in your home.
So you get paid by the day?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, I mean, you're not going to get rich off the money.
$20 to $25 a day is what I've heard in the past.
Let's try a little higher than that.
It's higher?
Okay. So I can tell you in the state of Maryland, they receive $943 per month.
Per month.
Per month. Okay. So
$30 plus dollars a day.
So you have, you know, two foster children in your home. You know, kids cost to raise them. I'm not saying that. And I do believe that, you know, they do deserve a stipend. What I'm asking for is for us to start really looking at how that stipend is being used. That's what I mean. If a child is leaving a foster home and going to another foster home, which, by the way, if you look at the statistics and the Casey Foundation shows you that the average child moves to seven homes. Seven. They're moving from home to home with a trash bag. What are you doing with that stipend? They should have a suitcase. It's not acceptable.
Okay. So I appreciate it, Carrie. And it sounds like our whole panel is urging you, if it's in your heart,
do it.
When you're thinking about it? Yeah. So let me grab Barbara in Rochester next. Go ahead, Barbara.
Yes. Hi, Kevin. Thank you for taking
my
call. It's basically a comment because I was driving, flipping the radio, and so I didn't catch the very beginning of this, but it was in regards to the children moving from one home to another and moving their items. I'm sure they have minimal belongings, but moving them in a trash bag. The reason I had to pull over and call because 15 years ago, my husband and I took foster care classes, and at that time, we were told this is what was happening with the children, and I couldn't believe that 15 years. Over a decade has passed, and this is still occurring. And I guess my comment would be that in every community, I would hope that either Target or Walmart or a store like that would give to social services at cost or at a great discount a backpack or a small suitcase for a child because, as other people have said, you know, the indignity of it all, they have to carry your belongings in a trash bag.
Well, Barbara, thank you. And if you missed it earlier, comfortcases.org is the website. That's the organization that Rob and Reese founded, and 25,000 comfort cases delivered in 2015, on track for higher.
Yeah, I think we should easily, by the end of this year, hopefully hit almost 40,000. We're going nationwide, as I told you, we're already sending to other states. And by the way, we are a 100% volunteer, community-driven charity. So I have a full-time job. All the people that work in our board, they all have full-time jobs or stay-at-home parents. And we do not have any corporate sponsors coming in and giving us anything. What we're doing is we're asking the community, and the community's delivering.
Well, not everyone is a foster parent like Caroline Haviland, though. I think eventually we're going to see a really good stock of foster parents. I think these kinds of conversations probably help with that. I know Carol Hunt would love to see more people call Hillside and say, how about me? One more time, how they can get a hold of you and get involved there, Carol?
At hillside.com or 585-256-7500.
Anything you want to leave with the audience before we go here, Carol?
Give us a call and talk to us.
Caroline, final thoughts from you.
I put all of my siphons usually back on the kids over the weekends. We'll do things, activities, things like that. So I'm not getting rich off this.
but are you getting rich in love off this? Are you enjoying it?
Oh, absolutely. It? Yeah. I love it, yeah.
Five great definitely. Years, as you said?
Oh, yeah.
And Rob, before you jump on the airport and get on another plane, talking about your story around the country, some final thoughts for our audience.
I just would have to say that, you know, I said this today and I'll repeat it. Everybody has a story, okay? So we all need to use our listening ears and listen to each other. We have to use our kind words, because hateful words have never changed anything. But the most important thing that you all must do, and we all must do as a community, which is lead by example. That's what we have to do for these children, is lead by example.
My biggest concern hearing your story is how little change you have seen over the years. Are you an optimist now? Is it hard to be an optimist about this right now?
It's very hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard. But I have a little over 400,000 children on my back that are making sure that I push through this, and we have to get change.
ComfortCases.org, Rob Scheer. You learn more about his story, his remarkable family there. They are appallingly good-looking family. It's the all-American family. Rob, thanks for the time. Really enjoyed it. Caroline Haviland, thank you so much for sharing your story, Caroline. Nice meeting you. And Carol Hunt from Hillside, thank you so much, Carol. Appreciate it. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, and we're right back with you Wednesday on Member-Supported Public Radio.